Baseball is back.
I want to see some real games.
The season is going to be different.
They've been given a gift with this 60-game schedule.
On the field, in the socially distant clubhouse, in the empty stands.
There's a lot to talk about.
There's a stunning development.
And this is the place to do it.
Tony, he talks, I listen.
This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass.
Brought to you by Big Y Safety Insurance, Rodenheiser Home Services, Woodbridge Wines, Gravely, and Jackson Lumber.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Barnes to Judge. Curveball. Fly ball. Deep left field, way back there. Aaron Judge, adios amigo. Oh, is he hot? His second home run of the night. Aaron Judge is guilty of putting the Yankees into the lead with his second home run of the night. A bomb into the night. It is 9-7 New York.
Corny, I know. Corny, I know. Aaron Judge goes deep. Guilty. Guilty. Jimmy Stewart, if you could, please.
Aaron Judge is guilty.
The judges never get that's really bad, isn't it?
Judge is hung like a jury.
Oh, that is so bad. I didn't even
Aaron
notice that.
Aaron Judge is guilty.
It just goes to show you, I never listen. Half the time, I don't listen to the announcers. Half the time. Because I'm too busy laughing my ass off after Matt Barnes hangs a curveball to Aaron Judge. So here's what we're going to do. Jimmy Stewart, our producer, has already opened up the phone lines, 617-779-0985. I feel compelled, under the circumstances, to give everybody a little bit of a State of the Red Sox, State of the Baseball Reporters address. So let me start with this. Your baseball team blows. Boy, do they suck. 3-7 after 10 games. I was hoping for something more. And honestly, it wouldn't take much. When the Red Sox were 3-4, how about that? When they were 3-4, they were tied for the eighth playoff spot. So again, it wouldn't take much in this season. And there is every chance, or let me rephrase, there is a chance that they start to play a little bit better and that they can finish with something close to a 500 record and in a 60-game season, make the playoffs. But I doubt it. So honestly, I'm just trying to be honest with you. I could sit here. The Baseball Reporters is obviously on the air as long as the Red Sox are on the air. Or Red Sox are playing, rather, is what I should say. So I could sit here and try to give you some sort of speech or argument as to why I think the team's going to be in contention. But honestly, I don't. So I can't bring myself to lie to you to that level. Frankly, I can't bring myself to lie to you ever, if you want to know the truth. I mean, I try to tell you what I feel. And what I feel right now is they suck. They suck. They're really bad. And their pitching staff is wretched. It's as bad as I've ever seen it. Maybe worse. In fact, I shouldn't even say maybe. It's definitely the worst Red Sox pitching staff I've ever seen. So I can tell you, on the one hand, if they could go 29-31, they might be able to make the playoffs. But with that pitching staff, having to play the Yankees and Tampa Bay and the teams in their division, not to mention the teams in the NL East, they're not going 29-31. Not unless something miraculous happens. So that's where I'm going to start, okay, because I want to be upfront with you. Nonetheless, I do think there is still a lot to discuss. There were people that called the program today, called Felger and Maz this afternoon, upset with Chaim Bloom, whom we'll get to this week. Because I think there's a legitimate question as to the state of the Red Sox, the plight they're in, the absolute mess of a season on top of it. So there's a big picture baseball discussion there. There's a Red Sox discussion there. Where's this all going? How would you handle it going forward? The performance of individual players, and we can do it all. And we will do it all. But talking about the individual games on a nightly basis, is the season that is going to be 2020 is going to be difficult because they're not going to play many meaningful games. If they had won one in New York, 4-6, you go and steal you win 2 out of 3, the next 2 series, you're 500, you're in it. I just don't think they just don't have the horses and the pitching staff to hang in there. And again, I think you know it. I know it. I think you know it. And so I can't sit here and absolutely try to sell you a pile of bull crap. I just can't do it. I can't do it. So what I can tell you is this. I can try to see things in games that really bug the crap out of me and ask, why are they doing it this way? And I'll start with this home run that Judge hit last night off of Matt Barnes.
So, Aaron! Aaron Judge is guilty.
It was a curveball, hanging curveball. I went off on the curveball last week. And I said over and over again, why do the Red Sox throw so many effing curveballs? And you know who throws curveballs? Teams that can't throw fastballs because they're afraid, so they try to trick you. To me, what that is, throwing all those curveballs, you know what's the equivalent of, Murray? And I'll put this in terms for the football fan to understand. Third and one, you line up in the shotgun and hand it off to try to fool the opposition because you can't line up with two tight ends and just slam it straight ahead and get the yard because you don't believe in your ability to do it. So what do? You line up in the shotgun, you try to trick them.
Get cute.
Okay, you get cute, which is what the curveball is. Think about it. The whole expression, how'd it go? Things went pretty well. They threw a curveball at me today at work. And what does that mean, threw a curveball? A wrinkle.
Mm-hmm.
Something different. Except how can, they threw a curveball at me. Or why don't you throw a curveball at him? Mix it up. The whole idea is that the curveball's different. It's a wrinkle. It's unusual. I said this the other day. The Red Sox have thrown the fewest percentage of fastballs in the big leagues this year. 35%, I think it was.
Yeah.
And instinctively, you would say, okay, 35% fastballs, that's low. But that doesn't include cutters, sliders, and some of those pitches, even though they're quote-unquote off-speed, like a cutter can still be thrown hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Martin Perez throws, an 88-mile-an-hour cutter. It's not exactly a curveball. But the curveball is supposed to be sort of a, a wrinkle. Mix it up. What percentage of the time do you think Matt Barnes has thrown a curveball this year?
Probably 65.
61%.
Which is absurd because Matt Barnes throws gas.
61%. And Matt Barnes has the highest average fastball velocity in the Red Sox bullpen. 95.2 miles per hour is what he throws on average for his fastball. And I would tell you, that's even a little low. He can go higher. So you've got a guy in the bullpen who throws on average 95 and really can hit 97, 98. Barnes can bring heat. Judge in the postseason has been vulnerable to fastballs up in the zone. 61% curveballs. So when you see that number, if we can look it up and get it in the bat of an eye, don't you think the Yankees have it? Don't you think Aaron Judge goes up to the box against Matt Barnes in the, I don't remember if it was the seventh inning, it was the eighth, right?
Eighth.
It was the eighth inning. Okay, it was the eighth inning. Aaron Judge steps into the box against Matt Barnes, and before he goes up there, someone says to him, remember, he throws a curveball 61% of the time. Sick curve. Sick. Just wait for it. If he throws a fastball by you, fine. But it's probably going to be up in the zone, and you can't hit it up there anyway. So you know what? Just sit on the curve. Wait for it. And when you see it, pulverize the freaking thing. Annihilate it, which he did. And now he's hot on top of it, right? So Judge isn't going to miss it, is the point. 61% curveballs for a guy who throws better than 95 miles per hour. That, to me, is stupid with a capital S. T-O-O-P-I-D. Stupid. S-T-O-O-P-I-D, stupid. You want to tell me Ryan Weber's got to throw curveballs or Zach Godley's got to throw curveballs? By the way, are we all convinced he's back to reality on Zach Godley?
Yeah.
He got his face ripped off.
He came back down to earth quick.
Okay. But Matt Barnes, 61% curveballs from a guy who can bring it. What are we doing? What are we doing here? Do you want to play the game or not? Or are you just going to screw around? Like, to me, that's what that thing is. So, look, I'll start Red Sox in this segment. I want to get to the big dilemma, or the disaster, rather, that is Major League Baseball and the plight of the game as it just disintegrates right before our very eyes. Because this season is falling apart. The St. Louis Cardinals got shut down today. They're not going to play for 4 days. That's three teams that have now been shut down. The Marlins, the Phillies, and the Cardinals have all been shut down. So we'll get to that. I want to talk about some of the happenings over the weekend with regard to the Red Sox on the field and off, long-term prognosis, all of that. And really, what if you are still going to dig in and watch? And again, if you are, you're a hardcore baseball fan, and this show's for you. So if you're going to watch, I'll tell you the kinds of things that I'll be looking for. And we're not going to get to it all tonight. We will get to it through the course of the week and over the course of the next several weeks. And I'll remind you that because the NBA and the NHL are back, that we also have Bruins and Celtics programming on this station that will limit the number of shows we may be able to do from time to time. So there'll still be plenty of opportunity to talk baseball. 617-779-0985. We'll start it tonight with Adam and Saugus. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good. So I was wondering, since the season's pretty much already over for us, would you think it'd be a good idea if we start guys like Jason Groom and Brian Motto who are in the minors? Because at least we don't know what they could provide. It's better than the trash that's on the field.
Okay, so Adam, thanks for the call. This is one of the things that I want to see, and the Red Sox are already alluding to some of it. And I can't remember where I read it today, but Brian Motto, Darwinson Hernandez, and Tanner Houck, all three, you know, pitching prospects in the organization. Darwinson Hernandez was a starter before the Red Sox moved him to the bullpen. Now they're stretching him out. They're stretching out those other two guys too. From what I'm told on Groom, I don't know that Groom's going to pitch in the big leagues this year. I think they just want him around the big league club and they want him throwing. You know, he's missed what now? A year and a half, I think it is, because of Tommy John. So my guess is the Red Sox want to keep tabs on him and he's never pitched above single A. But the other ones, hell yeah, I want to see them come up and pitch. Can they be any worse than the collection of clowns they're throwing out there on a nightly basis? And by the way, I'm not the only one who thinks that those guys suck. The manager thinks it. The manager will tell you what Ron Renicki said a little later in the show. If you haven't heard that, it really is unbelievable. Derek's in Weymouth. Derek, go ahead.
Hey, Maz, I appreciate everything you do, and I kind of want to touch base on, you know, Ron Renicki versus, you know, if Alex Cora hadn't done what he'd done, what kind of difference is there between Renicki's managing style and, you know, Cora, how close he was and how far behind the Red Sox were before they didn't know Cora was going to be suspended for the year and ultimately they had to fire him? You know, Cora's relations with the players, his evaluations of the players versus Renicki, and how big of a difference has that had on the team? I get 2020, we're in COVID, and that's had drastic impacts on the game. But, you know, I feel like Renicki's just listening to Carmine upstairs at this point, whereas Cora, I think, maybe had a chance to put his foot down and manage it his way and was more consistent and close to the players. I want to see what your thoughts are on that.
Okay, so Derek, what I would tell you is that Cora had a profound impact on some of the Hispanic guys. No two ways about it. I mean, look at them. Bogarts, Devers, Vasquez, Eddie Rodriguez, they all blossomed under Cora. I don't think that that's a coincidence. I think the Red Sox made a wise choice to bring him in when they did because they recognized that their core players were all from the Caribbean, basically. So, you know, Cora related to a lot of those guys. Vasquez, I think, is Puerto Rican. The other two guys, other three guys, Devers is Dominican, Bogarts is Aruban. Who's the other one? Oh, Eduardo Rodriguez, I think, is Venezuelan. So they're all from different places. But they're all Latin or Hispanic players, and Cora connected with all of them. No question. So I don't think, though, that that is the number one reason for the Red Sox being where they are. So as much as people want to dump on Renicki, and I've heard this a little bit today, it's not Renicki's fault. Are people serious with this? The guy got thrust into this thing because he was the next in line. It was the equivalent of like the vice president ascending in a time of crisis because you don't have a choice. That's what happened to Renicki. So do I want Renicki back to manage the team next year? No, I don't.
A mannequin.
Yeah, I don't think they want him back either, but I have a hard time treating the guy like a punching bag, Murray.
Right, so same here. He's just, he's trying to deal with what he's got.
Yeah,
He doesn't have much pull anyway. Manager does in today's baseball.
He got thrown into this because Cora got fired, and they had nowhere else to turn at a late time, and then the virus hit on top of it. I'll be honest with you, if I were Ron Renicki, I'd opt out. How old's Renicki? He's in his 60s, right?
I believe so, yeah.
I mean, you know, this virus is tougher on people who are older.
63.
And I don't know if Renicki has any underlying health issues or not, but if I were him, I would say, guys, I'm done. I'm out. I wouldn't blame him at all for that. With the crap that I've had to deal with, I'd quit if I were Ron Renicki. He won't. But if I were him, I would quit. So, anyway. But the Red Sox organizational philosophy on the baseball now, Matt Barnes throws 95 miles per hour on average and really can get up higher than that when he needs to. He's in a big spot. He's one of the handful of good, you know, decent, good, solid big league pitchers on the staff. This is the irony of last night. You had a chance to steal one. Barnes and Workman, you had your best guys. And you blew it. Because the Yankees are better than you and you don't have the horses. And Barnes gets beat on a curveball. Because he throws a curveball 61% of the time. Like, there's some things are about the talent. Some things you look at it and go, what the hell was that? Why is it? Everybody in baseball looks for velocity. The Red Sox get it and throw curveballs. Stupid. That's the stuff that drives me bananas. The other stuff that should drive you bananas is the way the game has looked as an institution during this whole pandemic, during COVID-19. We'll examine that when we come back. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the show that's all about baseball. The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Rob Manfred determined to continue this season despite 24 games missed already. What are you hearing from people around the league about how they viewed his statement from yesterday?
Hannah, the players were furious because as part of his statement to our Carl Ravage, he mentioned the players have to do better. And that really angered the players. They felt like he was finger-pointing. John Lester of the Cubs, for example, responded, paraphrasing here, saying, hey, we're the ones who are taking the risk. But this is at the end of a week of finger-pointing from both sides. We had tweets from David Price, from Anthony Rizzo, calling into question parts of the health and safety protocol and whether safety was a priority. I can tell you behind the scenes, Major League Baseball Player Association, conversations all the time, they're working together. But this undercurrent of distrust and suspicion has been there all throughout this process, so different than the NBA and the NHL.
Buster Olney of ESPN. This culture of distrust. It's been prevalent in baseball for as long as I can remember. Now, it gets worse than others. Sometimes it's worse than others, is what I meant to say. But the whole culture of distrust in baseball has been there for a long, long time. So I tweeted this over the weekend. Here's what I would tell you. And I tweeted this when I heard about the St. Louis Cardinals, who've been shut down. Just like the Phillies were shut down for a little while. They're back now. And the Marlins were shut down. They're supposed to be back tomorrow. But these teams are missing, you know, series, weeks, all of it. And now the Cardinals. How many people again with the Cardinals? 13?
Yeah.
7 players, 6 staff members. Because allegedly the Cardinals went to a casino. So, meanwhile, the players keep bitching at the owners, saying the protocols aren't safe, but none of them are getting the virus, it feels like, in stadium. I mean, if the Marlins got it in stadium, why didn't the Phillies get it? The Phillies were shut down because they played the Marlins and baseball wanted to make sure the test came back negative. And really, they did, but they had to shut down the Phillies for a little while until they knew. So if the virus is being spread in stadium, then why aren't the teams that are playing the infected teams also getting it? And the answer is because that's not where they're getting it. They're getting it in strip joints or in casinos or wherever else they're going. So the players clearly don't want to be bothered with having to quarantine or take precautionary measures to stay on the field. They clearly don't want to be bothered. And I would tell you that going back to the very beginning, the owners didn't really want to play the season either. So where I have settled is, the conclusion I've come to is that baseball's heart wasn't in this thing from the beginning. The players really didn't want to play. The owners really didn't want to play. They dragged out negotiations. The only thing they really wanted to do was bitch about the other side. The owners wanted to complain about the players. The players wanted to complain about the owners. They wanted to stretch that out so that they didn't have to play a certain number of games. And now here they are, and the players are failing tests because they're going out and they can't. They just cannot discipline themselves to do it. So now you tell me, as a fan, how do you feel about the overall state of baseball? You like watching this? This clown show? See, like, if I were a Yankees fan, I'd be a little annoyed that the rest of baseball can't figure it out. Yankees are 7-1. The Yankees are, they have something invested in this season because it's a year off the clocks or careers of guys like Aaron Judge or Gary Sanchez or Gerrit Cole, whom they just paid an astronomical sum of money to. So the Yankees say, well, we can't control the virus. You can't control the pandemic, so let's play. And the other teams can't even do that. They can't even get to work on time or get to work safely. They can't do any of that. It's infuriating. Not to mention the leadership of the game, because it feels like Rob Manfred's changing his mind every 5 minutes. On the one hand, he tells the Players Association, we need better cooperation from you guys. On the other side of it, he says, we're playing come hell or high water. So I just feel like, Manfred says he's not worried about it. We're going to play baseball, and then goes on national TV and says, well, there's a chance we may not play this year. So just the message is changing constantly. I'm telling you, deep down, their heart's not in it. Their heart's not in it. Some of the teams do or are, depending on, some of the teams want to play depending on what they have at stake and who they are, again, the Yankees, the Dodgers, and maybe that's only a select few. But the other ones, it doesn't sound like they feel like they give a rat's ass. It really doesn't. Tony's in Stoneham. Go ahead, Tony.
Maz, you couldn't be more right, I'm telling you. We're being screwed here in Boston because now we're watching Pawtucket. That's what we're watching with a couple of guys that would be ready for the majors, JD and Bogaerts or whatever.
Hey, Tony,
it's a disgrace.
Who do you blame for it, Tony?
I blame both of them. And especially the players, because the players should be smart enough to know you can't be going to strip clubs and places like that.
Okay, but Tony, who do you blame for the Red Sox being that bad?
Oh, I'd have to blame the front office. I really would, because I just don't think that they made the right moves. And I think they should have done some moves that they didn't make. And I think that's what we're paying for now. And what I would bring up the minor leaguers.
Okay, so Tony, I think we're headed there. But the idea of how the Red Sox got in the predicament they're in, well, this it sort of crossed my desk today. It really crossed my desk a long time ago. But more people called in about it today than I expected. Chaim Bloom, do you really blame Chaim Bloom? The people out there that are Red Sox fans? Do you look at the pitching staff and say, Chaim Bloom put this together? Murray, go.
Some of it. I mean, he's not fully responsible, but it's tough. He shouldn't be fully the scapegoat of how bad this team has been constructed. He inherited it, but he did bring in some of these stiffs like Martin Perez and some of these other guys you've never heard of. He is responsible for some of it.
Okay, so I would, absolutely some of it. I'm not going to tell you zero on that, Murray. I would never say that. But I would say for the overall predicament that the Red Sox are in, the overall predicament, Chaim Bloom's way down the list for me, way down. And I go back to the last year or two under Dombrowski, and I include ownership, obviously, because on the big signings and decisions, they sign off. Chris Sale couldn't pitch at the end of 2018, not the same way he did. I mean, he pitched in the World Series, but he was very limited. The Red Sox then gave him a 5-year, $145 million extension that hadn't even begun until this season. Now he has elbow surgery and he's out for the year. And he's probably not going to pitch at least half of next year, if not the whole thing. The amazing thing about the whole thing, really, is that 3 months after he got the contract, the GM got fired. So the Red Sox allowed Dave Dombrowski to sign an injured player to a bad contract and then fired him. When they allowed him to sign the contract, by the way, when they knew that philosophically they weren't on the same page. If you remember, John Henry told us that late in 2018, he and Dombrowski were not philosophically seeing things the same way, that their designs for the future were not compatible. So when you lay all that out and you say, how much more dysfunctional can you be? You meet after you win the World Series. The owner realizes that the GM's vision is not the same as his own, that they would have to start rebuilding the organization because, frankly, they sold out to win the 2018 championship. They had a historic record, but they sold out. Then in 2019, it all went to crap. And so they were faced with some really hard decisions. But let's go back to the fall of 2018. Henry and Dombrowski were not on the same page. 6 months later, Henry still lets Dombrowski sign Chris Sale to that contract. Not to mention the $68 million he threw at Nathan Eovaldi. Okay, so both of those deals happen. Then, a few months after that, the Red Sox get to the trading deadline. They're out of it, but they hold on to Mookie Betts, even though the Dodgers were calling and asking about the time, which we now know. Because Andrew Friedman of the Dodgers has told us that. He was inquiring and was trying to get Betts at the trading deadline in 2019. The Red Sox didn't pull the trigger. Dave Dombrowski was running the team then. A few weeks after that, they fired Dombrowski. The team goes in the tank. They make no deals at the deadline, and then the team goes in the tank and they fire Dombrowski. They then hire Bloom and make a deal for Mookie, which they then back out of because they don't want the pitcher, Brusdar Graterol, if you remember that. So they end up redoing the deal with the Dodgers and now are saddled with no pitching, bad contracts, and Chaim Bloom's been on the job for what? 8 months? 10 months? He had one off season in which he had no payroll flexibility and no prospects. So did he sign Martin Perez? Absolutely. I said that last week. I hold him accountable for Martin Perez. And Perez was a little bit better, so let's see what happens. If Perez gets good and they win a Eovaldi starts, maybe they play their way back into this. But I doubt it. So we'll see. But really, what GM was going to dig out of this mess with this team? Really, who? Theo? Pat Gillick? I'll tell you what, you could take the best parts of all the great GMs in the history of the game. Theo, Gillick, Schuerholz, go right down the line, put them all together and build the perfect GM. You still have no shot this year. You still have no shot.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show. The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Ron, at the start of the year, you talked about how there would maybe be some urgency to some decisions, more so than in a longer season. I know it's only two turns through, but Brian's inability to get into the fifth either time, does that make you rethink his spot in the rotation at this point?
Well, not really. I mean, who do we have that we can say that we're going to put in that's going to be better than Ryan?
Don't you love that one? Sean McAdam asked a question to Ron Renicki. You know, you've only a couple of starts, but are you rethinking Weber's spot? No, not really. Who are we going to put in there is better than him?
Really. I mean, who do we have that we can say that we're going to put in that's going to be better than Ryan?
That's great. It sums up the state of the team and specifically the rotation and any of the pitchers that they have. It's Ron Renicki telling the world, I'm just playing the hand that I'm dealt. What do you want me to do?
Oh, he's right. So, like, if you're Sean McAdam, what do you say to that? Yeah, you're right. Your pitchers suck.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I'm joking, obviously. And good for Sean for asking the question. Talk about an answer that actually gave us information. Ron Renicki looks at the staff and says, Sean, really? Who do we have that's better than him? Have you looked at some of the bums we have on our staff? We're picking up guys off the street corner every time they get released. Guys are getting released all over the place, and we pick them up faster than anybody. What does that tell you? That we're broke. We're picking up, again, used furniture that people are leaving out on their front lawns and on the curb. Old kids' toys, bikes, whatever it is, we can use it. You got a gas grill? We can use that. We're the Red Sox. We have nothing. We'll get something out of whatever we got. And Zach Godley? Ooh, the bloom came off of that rose pretty fast. Wow, they gave him a start, 2 innings, 5 runs. Is that what that was?
Yeah. Not good.
He sucks too, which is why he got released. Really? Like, what'd you expect? Again, you could take the best parts, Tony La Russa, Jim Leland, Bruce Bochy, and I'm just spitting names.
Making Franken manager.
Yeah, Franken manager. There you go, Murray. I like it. Franken manager. You're not getting anything out of this staff. Phil's in Cambridge. Phil, what do you got?
Yeah, thinking about, you know, Bonds' curveball yesterday, isn't the catcher somewhat responsible for calling the pitch? Don't the pitchers and catchers get together and discuss the hitters? And if the judge is susceptible to a high fastball and they strike out, why on earth would they call a curve?
Again,
why would the catcher? I think it was Pawlicki, or I'm not sure it was Vasquez or Pawlicki behind the plate. But why call a curve if he could mash it out of the ballpark? Why are they calling that pitch?
Okay, so good question. So let me ask you, Murray, why would a Red Sox catcher call a curveball to Aaron Judge?
Because they were told to.
Bingo! Bingo! Because somebody who's crunching the numbers says our data shows that we're better off throwing a curve. And I think they're out of their minds. So now, look, Judge has changed as a hitter over his career a little bit. But nonetheless, I'll tell you, if with regard to breaking balls, looks to me like he can hit one, especially if he knows it's coming. So I'll tell you that in looking at it.
I'm just not to cut you off, but how do people, like a guy like that, like calling this specific show, like you're a baseball fan, dude. Like, how do you not realize at this point? I don't want to mean like seem like I'm yelling at you, but autonomy doesn't exist in that game anymore.
No, it doesn't. No, in rare cases, right? If you have, let's just say hypothetically, like, and I'll just, you know, pick it because I know it. If Jason Varitek was still catching today, they'd probably let him do more of it, okay? Because they would say he knows what he's doing, he pays attention, and so we'll give him latitude. But most of the guys don't. Most of the guys don't. So they come down with the numbers. They give all the information. They say, here's how we're going to pitch this guy. And then the catcher just goes out and executes it. Remember, too, early in his career, Jimmy, did Vasquez get sent down to the minor leagues?
Yes, because he...
Stephen Wright fastball?
That's what it was, yeah. This was like 2 years ago. Or it was the last year of John Farrell. I remember it was a game against the Angels. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right? There was... And again, I'd have to look it up, but off the top of my head.
No, Murray's got the details right.
Yeah, I think it was Stephen Wright was on the mound. They called a fastball.
Yeah, he went
after Farrell went to the mound.
Yeah.
And so no matter what we do, if you fall behind the count, don't throw a fastball.
Vasquez goes rogue, calls for it, and then it set Farrell off, and he was down on the minors. Yeah.
And they hit a home run, right? Yep. That was my recollection of it, and Vasquez went down. So with that sort of training, don't you think the next time they told Vasquez to call a pitch that he's going to call it, or my ass is going down to AAA?
Of course, yeah.
So speaking of Vasquez, because this has popped into my head, and I wrote myself a note about it over the weekend. The one good thing Dave Dombrowski did was signed Vasquez to that 3-year contract. I think it was like 15, 13 million. This guy looks like he can play. There aren't many catchers that can hit. And so you want to tell, you know, if I'm going to sit here and tell you that Dombrowski got something right on Christian Vasquez, or something right with the Red Sox long term, signing Vasquez to that deal looks like it was a good move. Because that guy he's playing here out of the gate, and he had 23 homers last year, 21, whatever it was, 20-plus. To get that out of catcher, and I know it's launch angle and everything else, but that's one of the spots where you say, okay, I'll take some offense if you can give it to me. Steve's in Hingham. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Tony. I just wanted to bring up a quick point. So there's a lot of players, big names, you know, Trout, Blake Snell, Scherzer, flapping their gums before the season. Then they didn't want to do this. It wasn't safe. And now you have players going to strip clubs, going to casinos. It seems like they're self-sabotaging the season. I don't know what you think about that, but appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, Steve, I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't rule it out. Self-sabotaging the season? Absolutely. Think about it if you're the Marlins. The Marlins, you have no shot. You got to play 60 games no matter what, in theory. Okay, so just work with me. But if you're the Marlins, and you don't want to play, and they say, well, you're going to play your 60-game season, and you're going to play it at, you know, your prorated salary. So you're going to get whatever that is, 40%, 37% of your pay, whatever the number is. And the Marlins go out and say, and if I get COVID, I get paid, right? So what am I supposed to do? Stay in my hotel room all the time and suck all year and not have any fun, too, when I can go out and have my fun? And if I end up with COVID and I can't play, I'm still going to get paid. I'm 24, so I'm going to be able to handle it. And, you know, I might feel sick for a little while, but I've had the flu before, because a lot of people are looking at it that way, rightly or wrongly. And I won't pass a moral judgment on that part of it. But many of us look at it and say, no, societally, we have to be careful with this virus because it can overwhelm our medical system and those who are vulnerable in our world. That's what we have to do. A ball player says, screw it, I'm going out. I'm going to the strip joint. So would I say they are deliberately sabotaging the season? In a manner, yes. Deliberately, probably not. But you know what? If you're not doing things to stay safe and to play the games, then what's the difference? You're either taking precautionary measures or you're not. End of story. At that stage, what is the freaking difference? So the Marlins say, well, what are we going to win? We're not going to win anything. The Cardinals are probably saying, we're not going to win the World Series this year. We got a pretty good team. But it's going to be the Dodgers or the Yankees. And the other thing is, if we win it, people are going to laugh at it anyway. This is a 60-game season. It's not a real season. So again, remember that ball players, as much as we sit here and we talk about rule changes and pace of play and being able to make the game better, the way these guys were raised, they look at it and say, no. You're supposed to take your time between pitches. You're supposed to take your time in every at-bat. The game's played every day. It's played over 162. It's a marathon. Except this year, now everybody tells them, no, it's a sprint. So they're looking at it going, you can't crown a champion in 60 games. It doesn't work that way. You can't ask us to rush through it. That's not how the game's played. That's not how the season goes. So they're saying this thing's a joke no matter what. So they say, why should I take the precautions? So they go out and have a good time, and they go to strip joints. And in the case of the St. Louis Cardinals, a casino. Or so it seems, allegedly. Think of that one. A casino. Could you find a place that is more perfect than a casino to be a super spreader? Because I would say that place is just reeking, literally, of people who are, you know, I was going to say borderline, who are degenerates, who don't take care of themselves, who drink, smoke, and lose all their money. And then let's take them all with some other people who like the entertainment of it, not to mention they probably have a few bucks. Let's throw them all in cramped quarters, sit six at a blackjack table, and then cram another blackjack table right next to it, not to mention the slot machines and the craps game and the roulette wheel. Let's jam it all into a confined space. Indoors, no windows, no clocks, and have them stay there all night and see if they catch the virus. What do you think's going to happen? It's like a perfect environment for everyone to get COVID-19. The Rona, as Blake Snell called it. The Rona. Perfect environment. The Cardinals decided that's what they were going to do. And then you say, well, six coaches got it. Six coaches probably didn't get it by going to the casino, although maybe they did, because coaches and managers are probably some of the biggest gamblers in the world. I'll tell you that up front. A lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them. So they liked their action. Maybe they went, or maybe they just were coaching the players that were in the casino and got it from them. Whatever it is, they've sabotaged their own sport. Their heart was never in it from the beginning. Never, never, never. They were half-assing it out of the gate. And you know what? On the field now, it shows. It shows. Because you got teams being shut down all over the place and the thing's falling apart. Will they make it through the year? I don't know. If you're a Red Sox fan, you're probably hoping no. You want to watch that every night? Last night, they actually had a chance. This is a reasonably entertaining game, and they had a lead with their best guys on the mound late, and they blew it. But the fact is, if you were to ask the Red Sox players right now, tell you what, you could pack it in right now and go home, and we'll give you half of your remaining salary. Would you take it? I bet they would. I bet they would. I bet they want to get out of there fast.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.